And the world wanna know what this all about. But you know I'm here. All right. Here we are in the studio now with, well, he's not in the studio, but he's on by phone, Ali Danois, senior writer and editor for The Shadow League, former senior editor of Bounce magazine. He's written for many publications, Baltimore Sun, Ebony, New York Times, LA Times, and most importantly, he's co-host of WEAA's The Black Top Exchange Sports Report on Sunday nights here at 7. Dr. Jared Ball is in the studio, associate professor of media studies in the School of Global Journalism and Communication here at Morgan State University. He can be found online at imixwhatilike.org. Good to see you again, Jared.
Good to see you, too.
And Dr. Tara Bynum is back with us in the studio. Tara is assistant professor in the Department of English at Towson University. Good to have you in the studio, Tara.
Good morning.
And you all can join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me, at Mark Steiner. We've gotten these new people following us. So give us your thoughts on Donald Sterling and more and what this all means. There's many things that have been written and all kinds of commentary, some really interesting pieces and some kind of fairly shocking pieces to make us think. There's a piece I just handed to Jared. He's not quite sure he agrees with it completely. He's saying black folks are cowards for not standing up in a certain way to this. There were other pieces that were written that we read that talk about that this has violated Donald Sterling's privacy, that how many of us could withstand being taped in our own bedrooms and having it displayed across the country, and that the real issue here is what he said on that tape, which is when he said that we're talking about our culture, and our culture is too big to change. And what he was saying was, our culture, my culture, the dominant white culture that owns the corporate America is the culture, and you're messing me up. So that is, and there's other issues to do with Donald Sterling and whether that the NBA should have dealt with him and the things that happened to him before as a slumlord in L.A. All those things play into this. And so what do we all think? Ali, I know you have to leave us at 9:30, so let me let you begin.
Well, you said a mouthful, and I tell you, man, it's been a crazy last few days, and unfortunately, we've also been witnessing the most exciting first round of the NBA playoffs that I can ever imagine, and people are not talking about the magnificent LaMarcus Aldridge or the fact that the Washington Wizards have won a playoff game. A playoff series for the first time in a number of years. It's all been overshadowed and sabotaged by the most destruction ever waged by a gold digger since close to 100,000 Native Americans were murdered during the California Gold Rush in the 1800s. It's been crazy, but you know, just to cut to the chase, people are wondering if this lifetime ban and the maximum fine that was allowable, if that is only, you know, if that's going to be effective and if it was the right thing to do. And I agree wholeheartedly that the slumdog billionaire needed to have a message sent to him. There's no place for his thoughts and his actions in society. It's been a long time coming, and I'm a little bit disappointed that it took this long for the NBA to act on this man who has been known to be a miscreant and an enemy of minority people for a very long time.
Tara, and then we'll go to Jared.
I struggle with the Donald Sterling story in part because I wonder if the lesson here is that you can't say that America has no place for these kinds of things. You know, I think that on the one hand, It's cool that he's been levied this kind of penalty, but in another way, I just think, are we, and by we I mean kind of society at large, misunderstanding what's at stake? You know, so Donald Sterling at the age of 81 gets banned from the NBA. Is this a success story, or is this just his penalty for making public racism? And I think that that's the problem. The problem here is that racism is not supposed to be a public practice. And I think that there's precedence for the way in which white people are penalized for the publicity of their racism. But that's not to say that it does anything for the problem of racism. Instead, it just says something about the public quality of racist banter. And then that's when things get curious, because it wasn't actually public. It was a conversation between him and his
mistress. Jared?
Well, I think a number of things. First, I think what we're seeing in the response to this is capital's co-optation of dissent, and similar to what I think
you
I understood.
Capital's co-optation of dissent. Okay.
In other words, what we saw, and I think there are a lot of parallels to be made politically, but I think one of the things that we've certainly seen is that there's this idea that the response to Sterling from the NBA was from the ground up, from the players the mayor, Kevin Johnson, being involved and so on and so forth. But what I think is really the issue is that the other owners and major advertisers and those who invest in the team and look to make a lot of money from the team are the ones that were putting the pressure on the NBA commissioner to say, you need to get this guy out of here because he's messing up our money. And so by doing this relatively soft act, I'm not impressed by the NBA at all. I mean, it's a very soft individual punishment for a large institutional national problem. But what we're seeing from that, and even as was reported by David Aldridge, the NBA reporter on TNT last night, was that this decision made him proud, and it placated people's anger, and people who were there protesting outside the Staples Center in L.A. Disbanded and largely went home after hearing this decision, and they were happy. And this is sort of what I'm saying. So what should be another moment where I do agree with this homeboy Sandman piece that you gave me about black people being cowards, not that I agree with the way he phrased that, but that our standard for response should be much higher than what I think we're being encouraged to accept right now. And there are other issues that I would, you know, maybe we can get to later, but I think, you know, Sakivu Hutchinson's piece in LA Progressive about this being, you know, an important contribution to the discussion of black Jewish relations and the specific anti-black sentiment within the Jewish community and even in Israel, as he was mentioning in the piece there. He was saying, you know, he made that connection saying that in Israel, black Jews are treated like animals. I think this should be a moment where people look, you know, reflect on that relationship as well. And then also this piece about gender that I think is important here, the way that the mistress and whose name escapes my mind at the top right now.
Stiviano.
The way that she's being characterized. You know, I'm doing some research on sports talk radio, and I was listening intently to the coverage of the discussion of this event. And routinely in the middle of the afternoon in drive time radio, you hear white men describing this black and Mexican woman as a bee on the air in the middle of the day, like without any hesitation. Like, this shady, conniving bee. Yeah, Sterling is a racist and a dog, but this conniving bee is, you know, taping him and da 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 da. And, so I think that there's this anti-woman connotation in all this as well, that's saying, you know, how dare she, you know, abuse her role as a mistress, you know, the privileged role.
Abuse her role.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, the privileged role that she had as being this man's mistress and getting cars and housing and whatever, and then taping him and then sharing it with the world what he's done. And that again, yes, he's wrong, as everybody has to say pretty much publicly, but that she should not have done that.
So going back to Ali real fast, because I want to get Ali's voice in here before he has to roll. I mean, as well, I was talking about this, just the fine for a moment, and come back to all the things that Jared has just laid out here. I think there's a lot here to wrestle with. And Solange, Bruce, and Daki, we're going to get to your calls. We are going to get to all of your calls. The fine he got, there's an interesting piece that was written describing the fine he got of $2.5 million.
Yeah.
Given his wealth, well over $1 billion, that fine was akin to, if you took the average American income, is $44,911. It would mean that $2.5 million fine for Sterling is like $59 fine for somebody making $44,000. So let's put that in perspective. I thought it was interesting.
Like,
and if he's forced to sell the team, his $3 million investment will be returned at $800 million, right?
$12.5 million was the cost of the team when they bought it. And the team will sell for between $575 and $1 billion.
Right. But he only put $3 million of his own money up front. He financed the rest. So that's what I'm saying. He put out a very, you know, and he's going to make anyways.
He's going to make a ton of money.
That's what I'm saying. You know, this should be an institutional response. And 80% of the annual revenues from the NBA should be redirected into black and poor communities. I mean, they should just remove, you know, Dave Zirin made the great point yesterday that owners are superfluous. So let's get rid of them. That should be our standard.
Well,
I think.
I've always thought that every team should be like the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
Ali, and then back over.
Well, a lot of people looked at that fine and, again, you know, did the mathematical computations and said, you know, that's like $20 to you and I, you know, which is true. But when we look under, you know, the bylaws and the provisions of the NBA Constitution, it was the maximum allowable penalty. You know, he could issue a lifetime suspension and a substantial fine. I believe it was under paragraph 24 of the Constitution that the NBA owners adopted back in 2005, where the $2.5 million is the maximum allowable fine. And, you know, this is the full extent of what the NBA could do. So a lot of people said, well, that $2.5 million, you know, doesn't really add up when you consider the immense wealth that this man has accumulated. But, you know, Adam Silver is a very gifted attorney. He did his due diligence in those 72 hours when he huddled up with his advisors and his legal team, and they did the full extent of what they were allowed to do under the bylaws and the Constitution that they recently adopted. So I know some people said, well, you know, why not make him sell the franchise for the original $3 million investment that he put up front? Those are things that Silver and the NBA, they're not allowed to do. But going through all of the legal minutiae and trying to figure out, you know, how to maneuver while dropping the heaviest hammer possible under the guidelines and the bylaws and the restrictions of what he was up against, they pretty much gave him the full extent of the punishment that they were able to.
Tara, and then we'll go open the phones here.
I guess I'm still just left wondering, in part, what about Donald Sterling actually matters? You know, I guess I appreciate learning kind of the maximum penalties that the NBA is allowed to levy against him, but I'm still left wondering, like, what that actually means to me as a person, what that means to the communities that I'm involved in. And I think that that's why, I guess, I return to this idea of kind of the public nature of racist commentary. So, you know, is there, I guess in some ways, there's precedence for reprimanding white people who do speak publicly in this way, but that doesn't mean that it stops happening. It continues to happen. I mean, I think as I was reading up on Donald Sterling, there were examples of other coaches who have been penalized in this way. And there are other people who are outside of sports who have made this error and are kind of publicly vilified and shamed. And I don't necessarily want to return to kind of old models of racist behavior, but with this newish model of penalizing someone for their racist comments, are we actually affecting any system-wide change, or are we just making it okay or making it wrong to speak about race, and in so doing, kind of making it impossible to name racism?
Well, I think that one of the things that strikes me about all this, and I do want to get the phones, I promise we get people in here, and there's a lot of people calling in and get them to be part of this for the last half of our show at least, is that, you know, fining him for his racist behavior, I mean, people can argue the pros and cons of that, and we're doing that here, and people are doing it across the country. But what really is the issue here, I think, is the question of ownership and the question of white supremacy and all this, and the larger issue that nobody wants to tackle. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what he is. Somebody posited one of the articles, that's what he's really being fined for, because he said, I don't know about this other world. We've got to keep our culture alive, and the culture is what's important here, and I don't want to cross these boundaries. And I don't care who you sleep with, just don't bring him into my face through Instagram. So, you know, so that, I mean, that, it has, this is a question of power, I think, that is also part of this, and not just a question of some old guy who makes racist comments. And you mentioned his being Jewish. We can talk about it in a bit. That also, but that's the first thing I heard when I saw who he was. But oh no, and he had to be Jewish too. That's right. So, from my perspective,
right, no, understood. I mean,
so
no, I mean, I think again, you know, I went back last night, and I went back to the classic scene in Pacino's Scarface, where that scene where he and Michelle Pfeiffer are fighting in the restaurant, and then he says it as he's drunkenly and intoxicatingly walking out of the restaurant, saying, you know, what are you all looking at? You know, you need me to be the bad guy. You need to be able to point your finger at me so that you can feel better about you being good when none of you are any good. You know, you're all as bad as me. You just do it quietly. And I feel like that's what's happening with Sterling, that he's being turned into the scapegoat for an institutional global problem. As you mentioned, white supremacy, I would add capitalism and so on. And instead of saying, look at these systems that produce this kind of thought and produce this kind of economic windfall for people who feel this way, and look at how we've let him get away with evicting poor black and brown tenants from his buildings despite having paid their rent, and look at how he treated Elgin Baylor and Byron Davis and all the stuff that people have known for years. One other thing I found interesting in the sports radio commentary I listened to yesterday was that everybody was saying, all the reporters were saying, we've all known this. We've all known this about this guy.
Who wrote about it?
And my point is that to the extent that they did, who talked about it and who did anything institutionally to get rid of it? My point being that most of the people in power, I would argue, agree with him on some fundamental level, which is why he felt empowered to even feel this way with his mistress, and why he's been allowed to thrive all these years. And that's so now that he got caught and he's messing up some people's money, now all of a sudden they want to point the finger at
him. I'm going to go back to Ali before Ali has to go. Then I promise Bruce, Solange, Daki, Billy, 1, 2, 3, 4, get to your phone calls in order like that. I will say that Bomani Jones called out his slumlordness and racism many years back.
And Jamel Hill did as well.
Ali?
Yep. I mean, it's been a litany of folks out in Los Angeles, like Dr. Todd Boyd, the professor at USC, who have written about and talked about Sterling going back to even before the discrimination lawsuits. And it brings into question, you know, we just celebrated the retirement of David Stern, who many people, you know, label as the greatest commissioner in the history of professional sports. But we have to ask, you know, why did Stern enable this guy and allow him to run amok for as long as he did when we knew what his history was? And not only were we aware of, you know, his racist past, but Stern actually added legitimacy to this fool by awarding him Chris Paul after the infamous veto of the deal, of the trade that would have landed Chris Paul at the doorstep of Kobe Bryant and the Los Angeles Lakers. So there are a lot of questions in terms of why was he allowed to function in the manner that he did. You know, maybe they took the advice of General Motors, who knew they were selling defective automobiles but refused to recall them until the death toll and the public outcries became indefensible. They knew that this guy was a bull in a candy shop, and they just allowed him to be who he was. And I think at this point, they actually found the opportunity to say, you know what, this is a private club. We've been trying to get this fool out of here for quite some time, and now this is the opportunity for us to pounce on.
Very quick question. We go to break here. Let me read these two tweets. Diana Weiss tweeted in, Sterling has long been a hated man in Southern California. She writes from Southern California, in Southern California communities of color, as she just tweeted in. But Baltimore Sandlots, back on the East Coast, tweets in, does the racist meaning only apply to white people? Last time black man or woman fired from a job for racial slurs. Wake up. So on that note, we will...
Oh, man. When's the last time a black man or woman owned an NBA franchise and was worth $800 million?
You know who wants to buy the LA Clippers now?
Huh?
You know who wants to buy the LA Clippers now? On the way to break, it just came over the transom. Merriweather, the boxer.
Oh, really?
Floyd wants to buy...
Well, he can afford it.
LA Clippers. So we'll be right back. Bruce, we're going to get a quick thought from you, but since you've been on before this week, we'll go then to Solange, Daki, Billy Allen, and our two guests. Ali Denwa, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Thank you. Always great to have you on. Stay tuned this Sunday night. Don't forget to go to Black Top Exchange Sports Report at 7 p.m. here on WEAA. We'll be right back with our guests and you. Stay with us.
But if somehow you could pack up your sorrows and give them all to me, you would lose them. I know how to use them.
Train, pound cocaine, Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead, trouble behind, and you know that notion just crossed my mind.
All right, folks, we went to break, by the way, letting you know, with Mimi Farina and Richard Farina singing singing one of my favorite pieces in Pack Up Your Sorrows. She was born on this day. He died on this day. They were early folk singers here in the mid-60s. He died in a motorcycle crash, wrote this great book called Been Down So Long, It Looks Like Up to Me. And she was Joan Baez's sister, who died of breast cancer much too early. But we celebrated there, the lives and music. And then coming back, you heard Casey Jones by the Grateful Dead, because the real Casey Jones died on this day in 1900 in the train wreck in Vaughan, Mississippi, while trying to make up time on the Cannonball Express. That really happened. So Casey Jones.
See the dead live, Mark? Huh? You ever see the Grateful Dead
live? Of course I've seen the dead live.
Oh, okay, me too, man. It's an incredible experience.
Yes, it is. Yes, it was. That's Jared Ball, Associate Professor of Media Studies in the School of Global Journalism and Communication here at Morgan State University and online at imixwhatilike.org. Dr. Tara Bynum is Assistant Professor in the Department of English at Towson University. Number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Keep on tweeting, if you can, at Mark Steiner. And you can log on to our Facebook pages at 410-319-8888. So write to the phones. And Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah, morning. So, you know, I've heard most of the story. There's probably things I haven't heard, what the owner of the basketball team said. And he said some really stupid, moronic things that were a private conversation. So he shouldn't have said that stuff. But I think the punishment is too harsh. This is my suggestion. Suspend him from all operations for a year. Make him go to some kind of sensitivity training, psychological counseling, whatever it is, and then bring him back in a hearing and have a discussion with him and deal with it. But the thing is, that's his enterprise that he bought and turned it in. It was a failing enterprise, a business, and he turned it into a successful business, a successful enterprise, and now they're going to take the team away from him because, I'm going to say this, because a lot of civil rights people are being vindictive, and they're bringing in all kinds of other political statements that have nothing to do with that.
Thank you, Bruce.
He didn't do anything. He had three winning seasons, I think, in 30 years.
Right.
So he didn't build this franchise. The NBA was built around him, and because he was a privileged owner in a really an organized monopoly, he was able to thrive economically. So I wouldn't want to give him credit for that. You know, anyway, and I don't agree with.
And he hired a smart coach.
Finally.
4103, you got a basketball comment on that one too, Dara?
No.
410-319-8888. Solange, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say, first of all, it's great to hear Dr. Ball back on the radio. But I totally agree with a lot of the things you guys are saying. I think it's very important to judge people off their actions and not just their words. And I think there are so many Sterlings in the world. It's just we don't hear what they say behind closed doors. And they have the power to actually impact our lives as black and brown people. It's just, you know, they have employees and, like anyone else, they've built their wealth off of our labor. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. They built their wealth off of our labor and our talent, and it's just that their bigotry isn't blasted, you know, on the air for everybody to hear. So I just wanted to say that it's important that we hold all white supremacists and all people with these, I guess, sentiments accountable instead of just pinpointing one person using them as a scapegoat. So that's my thought.
Solange, thanks so much for holding on with your thoughts. Tara, you want to jump in first?
Yeah, I'm thinking about this question of accountability and the idea of white supremacists, because I think that something, and I guess this goes back to the point that I keep returning to. Yeah, I think that we need to begin to think about kind of the system of white supremacy. And I think once we begin to pay attention to the system and ways of dealing with the systemic issues, and maybe we'll have to hear less about the individuals. I mean, because the individuals are going to be there. And I guess I'm just so much more curious about ways to think about dismantling or upsetting or disrupting the larger system. And that's where the piece kind of Black People Are Cowards
right.
does kind of come into play. Because I think that's what he seems to be calling for. Like, when are we going to deal with the systemic issues instead of being really excited to point out the racist. Like, I see you. You are a racist. Right. Yes, I get a gold star because I can identify the racist. Like, maybe that's productive, but I think that there are other more productive modes of discussion, or even like landing at Donald Sterling and then staying at Donald Sterling and not necessarily panning back to the larger system. And I think a lot of the conversation, not ours, but a lot of the conversation about Donald Sterling has been local to Donald Sterling instead of using him as a point of entry into something beyond him.
Right.
I mean, there have been a couple people that have done that, but I think for the most part, it's like, oh, we want to talk about Donald Sterling's Department of Justice case. We want to talk about Donald Sterling's X, Y, and Z instead of thinking like, oh, what are the, can we talk about the system? Can we talk about, you know?
I do think that one of the things we're going to, that my hopeful signs about not just this, but just about what could happen is I think that the struggle against this systemic system that's going on in America is one of the 21st century struggles, more so than what happened in the 20th century, the 19th century. This is the consciousness of this is growing. Mm-hmm. And I see that as kind of the fact that there are so many people writing about this,
yes,
even though it wasn't in the major TV media, the conversation was being pushed through other ways.
I don't know. I mean, again, because a lot of the conversation that I've seen in trying to monitor the coverage for this research that I'm supposed to eventually publish, eventually one day and whenever, is that the conversation is was just said, localized around this one person. It's not really, I don't see a lot of conversation. So, I mean, I'm looking last night, you know, so words on the radio talking about the decision were used, like one commentator was saying, I'm now proud of the NBA. People on TNT, Barkley and Ernie Sims were saying that they're proud and excited, and Kenny said that this is therapeutic. I mean, you know, this is the kind of conversations happening. I'm sitting there saying, what ingrained inequality has ever been addressed positively by the NBA? I mean, there has been no, you know, the black, you know, percentage of, you know, wealth and household income and all this has declined over the last 40, 50 years. So where is this institutional investment in these communities and poor communities in general? That's what I would be more interested in seeing. That's why I'm saying it's not enough for me that this one owner is being blamed and targeted. And again, he's only being blamed and targeted not because of civil rights leadership, because, by the way, the NAACP was trying to give him yet another Lifetime Achievement Award.
How do you get two Lifetime Achievements
Awards? Amen on that. That's a very good, invest enough money.
We do have a call with a bunch of rest of us. So I'm like, we're going to get to the issue in just a minute.
Okay.
But I do want to come to California's NAACP branch.
But I'm just saying, so it's not civil rights leadership that's pushing this.
Right.
It's, again, capital. It's his colleagues that are saying, you have exposed us. You now must be punished.
Let me go back to the phones on that note. 410-319-8888 and Daki Napata. You're on the air. Welcome back, Daki.
Oh, God bless you, and thank you for having this discussion. You know, my mind, and I want to thank brothers and sisters for bringing it back to the community, because I'm an athlete, four-star athlete, went to Douglas High School, and I want to thank the brother who was on here. And when he talked about Raymond Chester, he went to Douglas High School trying to get a petition drive to have him in the Hall of Fame. The point I'm making is this, that when I was in the service and I was in Vietnam, when I came back, I was in California. And in Vietnam, I was a drug counselor and race relations counselor. And that was the first time they had that in a war zone, because I refused to pick up a gun. Having said that, I said it to say, one of the persons that I used in my teaching was a guy named Harry Cattano, Dr. Harry Cattano.
Yep.
He was a sociologist at UCLA. And he wrote a classic piece called American Racism, the Two-Category System for Maintaining American Racism. And the sister used the term white racism, or white world supremacy. The point I'm making is this, that I would like to thank Mr. Sterling, you know, for being a person used by God or the ancestors or somebody to be so stupid that he could be a lightning rod. The problem I have is, and I'll stop here, the problem I have is that too many people have amnesia. The new commissioner stood in front of a banner that had the logo of the NBA. And on that logo is Jerry West. You know, who is not only a great ball player, he's a racist, right? And I say that because, and the logo is not Wilt Chamberlain, it's not Michael Jordan, or any of those other greats. Jerry West is not even in the top 10, even though he's a great player. Having said that, I'm saying this. I remember LeBron James deciding on his own, right, you know, beyond the Dred Scott decision, a black man has no right, a white man is bound to respect. He decided with Wade and Bosch to take his talents to South Beach, and they lynched him. They tore the banner down in Cleveland, and they hung him in effigy up in Cleveland. And all I'm saying, so to see him, you know, out there, thank you, addressing racism, but how about having a memory? And that memory is the same with Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson caught AIDS, unfortunately, and everybody didn't want to play with him. It was like he was a leper. And everybody stood and had his back. So now he's a capitalist businessman, man, smiling faces back, and he's talking about buying a team and the like. All I'm saying is it is important for us to, as you're doing, have a systematic analysis of what's going on. Because when you say starting down the bottom in the community, the sister talking about, I live up the street from the Avenue Bears. That's Pennsylvania Avenue, where everybody talks about racism and violence. These kids, these young people have qualified for the national championship 2 years in a row. And not one church in that community, I was told, and not except for one business, a brother, a liquor store, who helped start the team, you know, and some of the brothers that's out there swinging, right, supported that team and Coach Dirt. Now, a church, Eden Baptist Church, gave $1,000 to have that team help so they could go to the national championship. Boys in the hood. When we see L.A., we must remember Rodney King. We must remember also Tommy Smith and John Carlos, who you had on, I think, so much. Because what? They addressed the system of racism. I ran with John Carlos at the Fresno Relays when I was in the all-military team. So all I'm saying is they address the fact that no matter what the stage is, playoffs or Olympics, we must address systematic racism, classism, and capitalism. Lift up people like that. What would Dr. King do? What would Abraham Herschel do? What would the little rabbi out of South Africa who stood against apartheid and against Zionism to address the changing of the system in South Africa? So thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Dr. King. Always. Always a pleasure to hear you, brother. Always. So 4103, you want to get another caller? You have a comment before we go to the phones?
No.
410-319-8888. Billy, you're on the air.
My question is a little different for the media experts. Where does Donald Sterling have a reasonable expectation of privacy? Should his conversation have been published and placed on CNN? And I'll listen for the comments.
I mean, I think that's a really good question, frankly. And again, this is in part, this is one of the reasons why I keep saying the focus should be institutionally on what these institutions do and their relationship with these communities, because putting it on the individual, I think, takes us away from what's really happening in this world and the fact that these private sentiments play out publicly in the daily lives of most of, you know, black and brown and poor working people. But I do think that this should be a question that is raised and discussed legitimately, because I think that he should have expected privacy, quite frankly, given that he was having a private conversation with his mistress. And the fact that modern day technology makes with ease the ability to put it out there and have it be used, I think is there's something wrong with that. I do think that there's something wrong with that. And again, the question is being downplayed or ignored in favor of scapegoating this one person so that we don't talk about issues of privacy and, more importantly to me, issues of ingrained institutional racism and their impact materially on people's daily lives.
And I think what's interesting about Sterling's commentary is, in some ways, that's precisely what he's talking about in the conversation with Stiviano. He's talking about the problem of publicity. You know, he's talking about the problem of making public her interactions and in some ways their relationship. So, I mean, I think that there's a curious kind of paradox that we can't use logic with, but bear with me. So I think that she is the mistress, that yes, he sits with courtside, but I think there's still an expectation that her behaviors will be private in the way that a mistress is supposed to be. Right. So, like, I'm not saying that this makes sense, but I think there's something really curious about his criticism about how public she is and how she's using social media in these very public ways, such that people are calling him about her behavior. And we are living in a moment in time where everyone wants to make their behavior public. And how do you police that? So in some curious way, he's trying to police her public use of social media, and it backfires precisely on him because she's using social media, presumably, to advertise this conversation she has.
I don't know. There are laws on the books about publishing recorded comments and whether or not the person knows they're being recorded. And it depends also on what state each participant is in, because different states have different laws.
California's laws are much looser.
Yeah.
And Carla Wills and I were talking about this before we went on the air. She was talking about how the laws in California in terms of being able to release these kind of things are have a less punitive than they are in, let's say, Maryland and some other places. So this is each state is very different on what you can put out there. And the question of privacy is a huge question. I think I want to throw this out before I go to the next caller, that when they said he had to, they wanted him to push him to sell the team, they left room door open for Rochelle, his estranged wife, not divorced, estranged wife, to buy the team. And she is a co-indicted person with him because of the racist housing policies that they perpetrated throughout L.A. and California. I mean, she was accused of posing as a public health worker to get inside one of her tenants' apartments so she could find reasons to evict these Latino people from what they all probably owned in what's called Koreatown. And all these Mexican-American and Central American and African-American tenants sued them. And they had to pay all these plaintiff costs.
Because they said they only wanted to rent to Koreans. They didn't want the black and Latino.
They wanted to only rent to Koreans. And so, so she, when talking about racism, she now could be the owner of the team, unless Floyd Mayweather gets to buy the team. I don't know.
Well, she didn't. She decried her estranged husband's comments, so she's okay.
Yeah, she's fine now.
She's suing the girlfriend.
She's suing the girlfriend. Right. She calls her a gold digger.
Right.
Which is what I think ultimately prompts this entire conversation.
The personal aspect of this is insane, but the underlying racism of how this stuff comes out, I think that there's so much behavior like this that goes unseen because what did I say? Mayweather, excuse me. 410-319.
Right, okay, right.
410-319-8888. Let's go to Nigel. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nigel.
Thank you for having me, and good morning to your guests. I'd like to put something out there that you touched on because I think that maybe your conversation really needs to take a serious turn towards the institutions that represents us, the NAACP in particular. What are their accountability to us African-Americans if they are aware of the behavior of the likes of Sterling, but still just justify being associated with him? There was one commentary that I heard that their excuse for being associated with him was they couldn't find anyone black, Jewish, or white, that were willing to sponsor some seasonal tickets for inner-city kids to go to some of these games. And if that's the only excuse that they have, I think it's lame at best. But how do we as African-Americans evaluate and hold accountable those institutions that claim to represent our interests first, as they allow themselves to be co-opted by individuals or organizations that have been known to express racist views and policies? I'd like to get the comment from your guest.
That's a really interesting question. And let me just throw this out, and Jared and then Tara can jump in on this. I want to put this out here, too, just as a comment on what he was saying, that the California NAACP has a pretty checkered history.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what it supports and doesn't support, when the GMO labeling drive was on in California on the ballot, they came out against it because they were funded by a lot of big ag groups, and their reason was, well, this is going to cost poor black people more money at the supermarket to have GMO labeling on our food. So they have a long history of like kind of kowtowing to big money.
Well, again, there's a long history of this organization and its stance throughout its history. Its founding, what was its initial purpose, what is its goal as an organization, how radical or not has it been? For a lot of us, it's been insufficiently radical since its inception. And then not only that, but you look at the NAACP taking money from Wells Fargo after the housing crisis to start up a so-called black financial literacy program to teach black people that your poverty is the result of poor spending habits. I mean, the NAACP is now taking money from the major telecom outfits to deny that network neutrality is an important issue for black and brown and working people. I mean, you know, so my point of agreement with Homeboy Sandman's piece about black people are cowards is not that I would phrase it that way, is that we do need to go back to some of our traditions of struggle here and look very seriously at rebuilding organizations and social movements that would put pressure on these organizations that I think have by and large taken big paydays to blunt progressive change more than they have to assist it. And this is just another another example. I mean, they gave an Image Award to Tyler Perry. I mean, to me, that's, I can't imagine getting much worse than that either. You know, so, I mean.
But I think if we start trying to follow the money, mm-hmm. things get real dicey. I mean, no one talks about how Martin Luther King got paid or, you know, other folks during the Civil Rights Movement. I mean, I think, and I think even
what do you
at
mean,
present,
Martin Luther King and other folks in Civil Rights
Well,
Movement
you know, paid. I think that finding out who funded the activities of the Civil Rights Movement, I think that you'll find that some people are legit, like maybe Harry Belafonte, but I think some other money is tricky. I think that's what makes following the money, or the reason that people don't follow the money, is because you might find out that money comes from places that you would disagree with.
But at least King took evolvingly radical positions that did lead to some of his money drying up, whereas we're seeing the NAACP and other major civil rights organizations walking away from that trajectory and going back into just, let's do whatever you want us to do. You know, we'll make a little fuss here and there, but that's about it, you know?
Yeah, it depends on the civil rights group, too. I mean, groups like CORE were then completely taken over by right-wing money.
Right, that's right.
And made into like this black mouthpiece for really racist white conservative movements.
That's
and
right.
But you had groups like SNCC and the SCLC, which especially under King, which really the money they got was from the left in New York for the most part, California, mm-hmm. and from churches. Mm-hmm. That was church-based money.
Yeah.
You know?
That doesn't necessarily mean the churches are doing right, though. You know
Amen.
What I mean? Like, I'm just, I guess the only point that I'm making is that sometimes when we begin to investigate the practices of the people who give us money, even if they have names and titles that we feel comfortable with, they still may have gotten that money from various sundry, you know, circumstances. And I think, I'm just saying that when we begin to ask where they get the money, we then need to be prepared for what we hear, and then understand that it might either upset the money. It might, you know, there's just a lot of things that come.
And certainly explain decisions being made. I think.
Yeah.
I think NAACP is a very interesting group because each local state group has funding from different places, as apart from the money that comes out of the national. I mean, Maryland NAACP gets a different kind of money than California NAACP would get. The Mississippi and North Carolina NAACP are much more militant organizations with what they do because, you know, they're a very kind of decentralized organization in terms of where the money comes from and what they fight for and don't. 410-319-8888. Alan, you're on the air. Hi, Alan, you there? Oh, just lost Alan? Yeah, he's been holding on for so long. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Jennifer, you're on the air from West Baltimore.
Hi.
Hi, Jennifer.
First point, I when did black people become so thin-skinned and naive to be shocked by this? What did we think happened in
we
the
got money.
Of white
why.
America? And at that point, we got money. And most of us are online, on Twitter, on Facebook, celebrating like we really have a dog in this hunt. I've been unemployed for over a year. I can't afford to go buy any basketball tickets, let alone a ticket to L.A. And furthermore, if I was Mr. Sterling, regardless of the SOB track record that he's had all these years, if I had to go down, it wouldn't be over this. It wouldn't be over something that was recorded during a lover spat in the privacy of our own, in his own home. If so, all of us are in trouble.
Jennifer, thank you so much. But he's not going down. He's going to walk away with hundreds of millions of dollars.
I mean, if he walks away, I mean, I think the Post had an article.
If he walks away,
I mean, because he could, there is a legal fight to be had here. They can't, you know, the owners all have to vote to get rid of him, and then even that can be challenged in the court of law. So, I mean, he may not go down that quietly. But Jennifer's point is exactly right, and this is why I keep coming back to this point about the institution needs to make reparations and the nation needs to make reparations and say, again, let's take this money away from the owners and invest it back in these communities and make these publicly held trusts. Since we pay for the stadiums anyway, we pay for the arenas anyway. Why not? Why are we giving all this money to him or to them?
I don't. Yes. 410-319-8888. Got me tongue tied, but yes. Alan, you're back. We have like 3 minutes left, Alan. What's your thought?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well.
Yeah, I'm out. first of all, I want to say that you stole a little my thunder when you talked about Core, because about a month ago I was listening to Sean Hannity. Don't hold that against me. And he had Roy Innes on there saying that Roy Innes was his favorite civil rights activist. So, so you got to pray about stuff like that. You know, and I'm glad to hear Jared Ball, even though he's in exile on your radio station. Anyway, to make it short.
Yeah, because we only have 2 minutes, Alan. So
this is the NBA culture is that they're using him as he's the Spiro Agnew of the NBA. That they're using him as an excuse to kind of draw lightning away. That there's a whole culture that's been in the NBA, a whole culture of not treating their members, the players right. The whole idea of an owner of a team. Those, you know, my God, that sounds like plantation to me, straight up plantation. And I would recommend there's a talk called The NBA and the New Minstrel Show. It's part of 7 talks by Bob Avakian that you can download for free and listen to that.
Thank you so much. And what you heard him refer to, Spiro Agnew, for those younger folks in the audience don't know who Spiro Agnew was. He was the governor of the state of Maryland, became vice president of Nixon, but when he ran for governor of the state of Maryland, he ran on a very racist platform to divide the vote. Saying your home is your castle, meaning that you have a right to keep black people away from your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So he was alluding to Spiro Agnew, who's our former Republican racist governor of the state of Maryland back in the late 1960s.
And speaking to that analogy the caller just made, I mean, Sterling did say to his girlfriend, you know, I feed them, mm-hmm. I give them cars, I give them houses.
Right.
This is exactly the plantation argument, right? Why go up north and work, you know, risk your life in a city and a job? You could stay here. We feed you and you have a place to sleep. And
Dr. Jared Ball, Associate Professor of Media Studies here at Morgan State University's School of Global Journalism and Communication. iMixWhatILike.org online, and Dr. Tara Bynum, Assistant Professor, Department of English at Towson University, and earlier Ali Danois from, of course, the Black Top Exchange Sports Report here in WEA. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
And thank you all for calling in and tweeting in. A very interesting program. We'll get to hear all of your thoughts out there about this really controversial subject. We're going out here now with Murder by Barrington Levy, who was a great Jamaican reggae and dancehall artist born on this day in 1964. We'll be right back as we meet with women who are coming to town with an organization to talk about moms and their take on violence in our world. Stay with us. No dress up in that jacket and them dress up in that tie. Come a court house want to tell lies. Them are